Welcome to Making Sense of MarTech, a regular set of conversations with some of the most interesting people in marketing, tech, and advertising. I'm Juan Mendoza. I write the MarTech Weekly newsletter. It's a weekly email that covers the most important shifts in marketing tech. You can read, listen, and subscribe at themartechweekly.com. Okay, today we're joined by Bobby Tichy and Michael Burton, co-founders at Stitch. Both Bobby and Michael are well-respected within the MarTech industry and bring a very unique perspective to customer engagement, CX, tech stacks, and the MarTech industry overall. Now, Bobby is a veteran of two of the most well-respected brands in MarTech, Marketo and Salesforce, where he led and supported implementations for many large brands. After this time with those two companies, Bobby moved on to Lev, a Salesforce consultancy, before the company was acquired in 2022 by Cognizant. At that point, Bobby teamed up with Michael, the dynamic duo, and they co-founded Stitch, a MarTech consultancy that focuses on Braze and marketing technology architecture. In his role as the Chief Solutions Officer, Bobby leads the company's solutions team, and he loves to talk about MarTech architecture, CDPs, the customer journey, and all the things we love talking about here at Making Sense of MarTech. Michael is also a veteran of Salesforce, and he's also worked across several other companies, including ExactTarget, which went on to be acquired by Salesforce. Now, leaving Salesforce, he's also made his way over to Lev, where he rose up the ranks as a senior director to SVP to the CEO, the position he held when the company was acquired. Now serving as a CEO of Stitch, Michael is continuing to focus on building and scaling professional services for marketing technology. His areas of expertise include meaningful metrics, customer engagement, CX, and the MarTech industry as a whole. Now, in this conversation, we dive into going through the process of a company acquisition, implementing the right marketing technology stack, CX strategy, Stitch's partnership with Braze, which is very unique and fascinating, and a look into the future of marketing technology. And now I give you Stitch's Bobby and Michael. How are you doing, folks?
Great. Thanks for having us, Juan.
It's fantastic to have you here. And we are so excited to have this conversation because there is so much happening right now in the consultancy partnership space. There is so many new amazing consultancies starting up all over the place. And it's great to get you while you're still in that ramp up mode with Stitch. But I want to take a ride back to when you guys first started out. Bobby, did you want to kick us off? How did you get into the MarTech industry? I mean, what fascinated you about it when you initially got into this space, and how's that changed or evolved?
Yeah, there was no big plan to get into it, that's for sure. It was really the right place and the right time. And I kind of started down the path when I was in school. And there was I don't know if you remember, but in school, you typically had those big listservs where if there's a job opportunity or an internship available, well, we got this one that was, hey, I need help building a website as a local business, and they'll pay $14 an hour. And at the time, I was like, holy cow, 14 bucks an hour. I don't know how to build a website, but I'll figure it out for $14 an hour. And so, yeah, I called the guy and I told him, hey, I don't know how to do this, but if you'll bear with me for a few weeks, I think I can figure it out. And luckily he said, okay. And a couple years later, I snuck into a career fair that was not my college's career fair, but it was a much better college than the one I went to. So I had a better career fair, met some folks at ExactTarget, and the rest is history. I didn't know anything about email marketing or marketing technology, but I just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Amazing. And how about you, Michael? How did you get into this amazing world of marketing technology?
Yeah, my entire background has been in professional services and consulting. And growing up in Indianapolis, knew ExactTarget, had become a publicly traded company, had acquired Pardot. And I was keen to be, I want to be a part of that, like a lot of excitement around the culture and the momentum around the business. And so I think I first interviewed with them maybe in 2010 or 2009 and got turned down, went through this long process. And I was so bummed. So I always had them on my radar, though. I wanted to get back into ExactTarget. And then eventually in 2012, 2013, made it happen. So just like Bobby, this was my first time getting into marketing tech, kind of professional services. It's been an awesome decade and got to know Bobby quite a bit. I give him a lot of crap here and there, but he is fantastic and glad that we're working together.
That's fantastic. Now, you both have experienced, I guess, the acquisition of Lev and that exit into doing something new, which is Stitch, a consultancy working in the marketing tech space. I guess coming out of that acquisition and knowing both you folks have worked on the tech side, on the consultant side, you've been in the industry for quite some time. You've seen a lot of the pain points and a lot of the challenges, particularly brands when facing implementing and using marketing tech. But what was a unique challenge or pain point that you were trying to solve when you launched Stitch? What did that initial conversation or whiteboard session kind of look like?
I would say it started before we even understood the pain point. Like if you kind of rewind, Bobby and I were at Target and Salesforce together. Bobby left, goes to Marketo. I'm still at Salesforce. And we realized, hey, there's this opportunity to build a really strong Salesforce marketing focused consultancy. So Facebook messaged him, the only time I think I've ever used Facebook Messenger for recruiting, and said, hey, why don't we go to Lev? And he was like, what's Lev? Why would we do this? You're crazy. And so we went into a business. You called that one. Like, I didn't come in as the CEO. Bobby and I were not the co-founders. So we came into a business and we ended up having a tremendous success story. And we pivoted that business to became what it was, Lev, leading up to the exit to Cognizant in April of 2020. So we had that great experience, but I think both of us had a little bit of like, we should go do this. Like, we should go do this on our own. So even before you talked about like a pain point that we wanted to solve, we just inherently knew we wanted to continue to work together. Even though we do give each other a lot of grief, we wanted to be a part of this kind of new journey. And we knew we wanted to be in consulting, and we knew we wanted it to be in the marketing tech space. So that's really what started. And Bobby can talk a little bit about the pain points that we then saw after we realized we wanted to go do this.
Yeah, I think after being at ExactTarget and then part of the Salesforce Marketing Cloud ecosystem for about 10 years, you know, you understand the platform really well, but then you also understand the shortcomings really well. And you work with all types of customers, small, big, large, global, and really trying to figure out what problems are they trying to solve? And is the technology that we're consulting on solving those problems, or is it creating more problems? And so as we started to look out into the ecosystem and MarTech of what would be our next focus, we really went to a lot of trusted advisors that we have, of friends that we worked with in the past, people who are now at Snowflake and Movable Inc. and Databricks and places like that, to better understand kind of who are the players in the market. And the one name that kept rising to the top was Braze. And so as we were going through the last couple of years of Salesforce Marketing Cloud and helping there, the number one competitor that we were coming up against was Braze. And they were this up and comer. A lot of people thought they only did mobile, which was obviously not the case. And so it was just this great story of kind of moving away from the legacy marketing cloud and getting to the modern customer engagement platform that could actually send mobile messages, could actually personalize on the web. Things that, you know, Salesforce or Adobe or Oracle can say that they do, but to get those things up and running takes so much effort, so much time, and so much money. So that was really kind of how we stuck on or were able to get to Braze. And, you know, to Michael's earlier point, I like to tear him down a lot, but I also tell everybody that he's the last person that I ever want to work for. So if he at some point decides to retire, I'm gonna have to go be a carpenter or something like that.
Building a different type of architecture, Bobby.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, it's interesting that you mention that the opportunity you saw with Stitch and this new consultancy was a lot of the, say, the more savvy brands, the more sophisticated ones, were moving away from the monolith marketing suite where, you know, as you say, there is a lot of promotion around being able to do all those things around personalizing on the web and SMS and apps and actually be able to go and use all your channels effectively. But in reality, to stand that up, a lot of these large marketing suites are so siloed in their own right that it's hard to even just integrate the data and the interactions and all of the things across the customer journey. But then you say, okay, we've got this new platform, which is Braze. And over the past 5 or 6 years, of course, they've done a very good job with getting into market with the new value proposition, helping people transition to more modern, more, I would say, probably omni-channel or cross-channel platforms that can do things, not just email, but can do experiences across multiple channels. So you saw this kind of curve of companies adopting that. But I'm curious to know, perhaps, Bobby, if you could help me out here, what kind of companies were adopting Braze? I mean, and looking at this sort of more modern way of doing customer engagement and customer experience.
Yeah, I would say that the majority of the ones that we saw early were the more mid-market. So think, 250 employees up to, 1500 employees. But at the same time, we were seeing these large global media entertainment brands, some of the largest, most recognizable brands in the world, pivoting to Braze for certain channels. And if at first, sitting side saddle where Salesforce Marketing Cloud might do email, but then Braze was doing mobile, and then slowly migrating everything over to Braze because the UI is better, the SDK is more lightweight and more secure, the platform is more friendlier to marketers. And so as we were seeing this pivot, we also realized too that the implementation path is so much less of a burden. I think to your point, when you're looking at a lot of legacy cloud providers who are more holistic in the way that they market, there much many of them are all acquisitions. Like if you look at Adobe, almost every single one of their products is from an acquisition. And granted, I think Adobe's done a nice job of integrating all of those together. There's still different foundations, there's still different infrastructures. So whether you're integrating everything in an Adobe stack or you're using Braze combined with a ServiceNow combined with another e-commerce platform, it's essentially the same kind of thing. There are certainly some nuances there that we could dive into for hours, but I think that's where we really saw the benefit to a lot of customers of more lightweight, easier path to implementation, and then really a more of a focus on how do we drive more use cases? How do we drive revenue through the platform rather than just trying to migrate from one platform to another or initiate another channel? How can we really focus on the creativity of what we're trying to drive with a brand?
I think it is interesting. I mean, it's almost as though companies are wanting to drop the weight, the bloat of having an all-in-one monolith type platform that a lot of it go. I mean, there's some of the recent stats around MarTech utilization is that I think less than 50% of marketers are using the entire MarTech stack. It's pretty abysmal at the moment in terms of just using the technology where you've got these more modern point solutions like Braze, like others that can kind of come in and say, yes, we can sort of do segmentation on email and the app in also SMS. We can push those channels out, make sure that's all consistent with users. But yeah, there's this fascinating sort of way of thinking, okay, maybe we need to drop the weight, the brands do, but also they're becoming more sophisticated anyway. They've got more developed technology teams, particularly in retail and e-commerce. A lot of these e-commerce businesses have very strong tech teams now and data teams, so they can actually pull a lot of this stuff off without having to rely on a large monolith. And so it is a fascinating point in time. I mean, a lot of consultancies, I think, are doing this kind of pivot and helping these companies that are wanting to do stuff faster, better, obviously. We'd hope cheaper as well and drop some of that weight. I mean, it's the tech you just do not need to use. So it's fascinating. But I guess I want to talk about the building and operating on the right MarTech stack. And I guess supporting these modern day marketing initiatives a little bit more. And I think there are some challenges around implementation, no matter what your MarTech platform is. I mean, the hardest bit often is just implementing it, and actually having something that's usable, that the team knows what they're doing. And you, as a MarTech leader, you feel confident that you can actually implement and create use cases and that lead to some kind of value. When we've got all of these different solutions now, we've got all of these different pieces to the stack, and there's just so much to think about. I mean, do we have too much tech at the moment? I mean, should marketers be even being the ones that think about buying tech and implementing it and using it? I mean, these are pretty broad questions, but maybe we could start with the first one, which is there just too much stuff in MarTech stacks these days? Is that what you're seeing with your clients?
Boy, well, I think the short answer is probably yes, right? Because so many of these platforms overlap. I think the one thing that I always keep in the back of my head, and I put myself into this bucket because I think of myself as a marketer. Marketers are horrible at buying technology. We see the new shiny toy. We think, oh, this is going to help us do that one thing that we haven't been able to do. And I think especially with Michael and I's experience on the consulting side of this is a lot of times if you find a good consultant or find a good integrator, they can achieve what you're hoping to do with your current platform without having to buy a new platform. There are obviously a ton of caveats to that, but I think that's the number one thing that I would say, in addition to there being too much tech, is that marketers, a lot of times we rely on emotions or like thinking that something will be so much better, grass is greener type of a scenario, versus thinking through, okay, tactically, kind of like what a technologist or an engineer would do, is like, here's the feature set I need. Does my current tool have it? If it doesn't, what would it cost? Both value and time and effort to build that out versus what if I just bought one? I think a really good example of this is where a lot of companies now are trying to build a marketing automation platform or a customer engagement platform versus buying one, which I understand the thought process there, right? It's kind of like while marketers are bad at buying technology, engineers are bad at evaluating technology. Right. So an engineer who builds an application that becomes a billion-dollar valuation thinks, well, I can just build any application. Well, just because you could do it doesn't mean that you should do it. So I'm not really sure I answered the question,
No,
Juan,
it's
but
very helpful.
I've at least gotten a few things off
No,
my chest.
it's helpful. And Michael, maybe you can help me with this because I think you've seen a lot of this as well, in that, you're in the room, there is, say, a request for proposal, there's say a team of people that wanting to buy a new marketing automation platform. And they're considering different things. And I think that, often in marketing, the incentives are very different from, say, IT and engineering. Like IT engineering think more about what are our features? What do we need to actually, what capabilities do we need? And then, can we implement it safely, securely, and actually get the job done? But marketers have that consideration and a list of other things like, is this going to drive a better NPS? Is this going to drive a better customer experience? Is this going to get to our revenue goals and help us drive value and revenue and growth for our business? Those are very different questions for tech. But how have you wrestled with that, Michael? What does that look like on your side?
It's always interesting when I talk to some marketers who will say, I don't want to have anything to do with the tech. Like, just give me the tools, I'll go run with it. And I just think about like in my own current role, which is it'd be like me saying, we're just go hit the revenue numbers. I don't care about the people that come into the business. It's like, no, you have to be vested in it. So that's what we talk about with our marketing teams. Because one of the things that there are brands that do this well, where they have a strong marketing, true marketing tech team that's sitting between kind of day-to-day marketers and the IT team. We don't think that's the norm though. And where we see us having a great opportunity is helping fit between that. We become people like Bobby, who's incredible at what he does, is the bridge between the marketer and the technology side, because he's both done the marketing side. He understands infrastructure. He understands all these different applications. And that's where we kind of position ourselves. Like, let us help you. Let us help you with the RFP. Now, we'll have a very strong point of view. We're not an agency that's touching six or seven competing platforms. We have one very strong point of view about why we think Braze is the best, and we're very open about that. But when we think we can be that bridge, we can help better pull these teams together, because we want all parties to be invested. Because we see the downside when the marketer's not involved, and suddenly, right, they're complaining in 6 months because it's not something that they can use, and they're not getting the results wanted, as you kind of called out. And so that's what we see right now. So you should be invested in this and lean in. If you don't have that expertise, lean in to consultants like Stitch to help with that gap.
It's very interesting. I mean, the role of consulting and I guess those professional services across strategy, design, the actual implementation, the technology work, the data work, a lot of brands still heavily rely on consultancies to make that stuff happen. I mean, it's very rare where I'd see a company, unless they're like a hyperscale, Silicon Valley tech company, it's very rare to see a business completely do all this stuff by themselves, right? And that's the sort of value of consultancies. They bring that expertise in, and you can hire it and partner with these folks to give you strategic insight, to give you direction. But also, look, let's just face it, marketing is a lot of marketing, particularly the more senior you become in your role, if it's in digital or in product or in marketing, a lot of it is just alignment with other stakeholders. It's just getting people to agree on stuff. And I can't tell you how many situations I've been in where I'm working with a large enterprise brand. They're wanting to get some use cases in the market, but they can't make any decisions. You know, there's all this crosstalk and all, there's no clear leader on who's going to be doing things. And marketing is talking with analytics, and then digital is, you know, knocking on marketing's door. And they don't have that leadership, I guess, often to go, hey, these are the things we need to do. This is our expected outcome. Let's get to it. And I think consultancies step into that role a lot. I think some of the challenges often with buying, implementing tech is just getting people aligned. But when you have an external person that's got that experience in marketing tech, they can come in and actually have set that direction and get everyone on the same page that's not sort of within the specific context of the business. Have you found that, folks? I mean, just that role of leadership, I guess, from a consultancy perspective?
Yeah, I think it's because we have no preconceived notion of how things operate within your organization. So we're coming in and looking at things as fairly black and white, especially when it comes to like the three main things that we're thinking through, which is people, process, and technology. So what people are you missing? What processes need to be changed? And then do you have the right technology, or do we need to switch that technology or add to it or potentially deprecate some pieces of it? But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I'm working with a company right now where we're scoping out their implementation, and we had a call with their engineering team the other day. And early on in the conversations, and the marketing person says to the data engineering person, hey, we need all of our data from Snowflake. And the data engineer's like, well, what do you mean? I can't just give you all the data that we have in Snowflake. That doesn't make any sense. Like, what are the use cases? You know, what's driving it? So back to your point, I think a lot of times we, as we're coming in and working with customers, use cases and driving value is one of the number one things we need to focus on. Because even when we've got a migration, let's say someone's moving from Oracle Responses over to Braze, the focus is so much on the migration when it should be on the migration. That's a key part of it, but it should also be you're getting Braze, which is has so many new features that you didn't have in Responses. How do we migrate things over, but at the same time, identify areas to drive new engagement, to drive new revenue that you didn't have before? And that's where like what we've come out of. We had, you know, 2-3 years where I think anybody selling MarTech was hitting their quota because we were in COVID, everybody was at home. So you had to engage these people digitally. Well, now coming out of that, we're on the flip side where the CFO is scrutinizing every single dollar that's spent above and beyond the earmarked budget. And so what we've got to do is make sure that we're not just switching from Oracle Responses to Braze just to switch platforms. We're going to see the value 10 times because we now can have web incorporated. We can have mobile incorporated. All these different elements that I think sometimes, to your point, when you're just internally, you're stuck in your own bubble, you're a little bit handcuffed and thinking outside the box.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Michael, I wanted to get your view on this. I mean, there's a really funny tweet from Aaron Spinley, and I just read it a couple of days ago. And he says, don't get your CX methodologies out of the vendor cereal box. I'll read that again. Don't get your CX methodologies out of the vendor cereal box. And I think what he's getting that out there is that I think part of this implementation utilization of MarTech is that a lot of companies kind of just take the advice of the vendor and what they're selling. So, hey, you know, we're going to implement you. We're going to develop 3 use cases. A lot of these vendors also have their own like strategy team that come in and help with the initial setup and some support. And, you know, there is, I think, a challenge with that, which is it's those use cases are vendor led and often are very biased towards the actual vendor and what they want to do with you instead of the actual strategy. But Michael, what is your view? I mean, like just setting down that strategy, doing the analysis to figure out what are those use cases. So you can go back to, as you say, Bobby, you can go back to that engineer and say, well, we need columns X, Y, and Z out of Snowflake, and we need these data points for this specific reason. What's your process? How do you think about that methodology around finding the value, doing the analysis, and actually creating those use cases where it really makes sense?
Yeah, I like that tweet because it resonates because we have one of our customers who normally goes through a very complicated RFP process. They're thinking about, do they do a CDP? What other solutions do they want? And they've been through this enough. Like an RFP, in a lot of cases, isn't easy to hide. Like really, what problems are you trying to solve? And this CMO said, I don't want to do an RFP because I'm just going to get every single vendor's story. Like that's it. So like, let's go to find someone who's an expert that understands the space, who can give us an objective and strong point of view as well about what they think. Because I think that is something that's we have this going well with our team of consultants because it starts with, it's not about the technology at all. It really isn't. It is about the people side of it. And we're trying to do a just kind of stepping back a little bit and understanding what problems are we exactly trying to solve. So I even talked to the Braze team. We work closely with the Braze team and say, it's not even like making Braze work is like, maybe 20% of what it takes to actually get Braze to work at the end result. And our team of consultants are very focused on like what we'll go back to that root. What specific problems are we trying to solve? And we're also coming with our own point of view. What are other marketers in your same specific vertical? What are they running into? What are they bringing? What are they solving? How are they solving these problems? And we have that broad sense of expertise that we're bringing to those specific customers to cut through a lot of the noise that they get from specific vendors. And we love Braze, yes, but they are also a technology platform. And we have to call out what it can and cannot do, just like any other platform. And I think that being very open, having that strong point of view, and having a lot of experienced marketers on our team are allowing us to help our customers see value a lot faster and cut through even the buying process a lot faster than they normally would.
What kind of industries do you folks work in? I mean, are you across a few different verticals there, or you focus on one specific type of industry?
We don't focus, we've never focused even at Stitch and even at Lev. We had a lot of pressure to say, hey, you should build a very specific vertical play. Like, that's the only way to grow. And we, Bobby and I have just said, we don't think that's the case. These problems that marketers are trying to solve are fairly common across many verticals. Now, terminology is different, vocabulary is different. We have to be educated on that. But we've never gone in with a strong particular point of view. Now, you will see just kind of naturally certain verticals start to emerge in our customer base, but it was really wasn't by initially by intention. So you get a lot of media and entertainment. We did a lot of financial services, retail, CPG. And then once you started building some of that experience, then suddenly you were doing more and more. We did a lot in professional sports, and then word of mouth kind of spread. But we never really went and said, we just want to go do this. We've been very open and it's worked for us. We've been really successful doing that. And I think we'll continue to take this current strategy until it doesn't work.
And what I love, because I've come from a consultancy that had the majority of my business verticals in their portfolio, from nonprofits to finance to tech to retail, all the way through to government services. And what I loved about that was that if you're a consultant or a strategist or somebody working in that situation where, say, you're in your own portfolio of work, you've got like three or four different verticals, it's a real breeding ground for creativity, I find. Like, you can see what works, say, with like a health business or like a medical company, and you can go, oh, that's so fascinating how they think about their data schema and their structure. And then you can take that to retail, or you can take some tactics from, say, I used to work a lot with an airline vertical, and the airline vertical is like really low margin. The business is super low. So they try and upsell people like crazy, and you learn a ton of things about how to get more value out of each individual customer. And I look at that and I'm like, wow, there is only a few people, like there's only a few groups of people in the world that have that discipline where they see across a variety of industries and they can join the dots between strategies that work across different industries and bring that creativity. So I think that a lot of folks, when they think about hiring a consultancy, they think very pragmatically, like, oh, we need to get five use cases done by the end of the quarter, or we need to implement Braze as an example. But often the missing value piece there is actually, no, you're hiring folks that have this world of experience across a variety of industries and disciplines, and that in a specific application of marketing technology, which you get so many interesting ideas. And I think that's what I want to go to next. And Bobby, I'd love for you to chime in on this one, because this is the most often overlooked area, which is the ideas area. You know, in marketing tech, we are so efficient and pragmatic, and like, how do we get this stuff done? How do we link the data? How do we get this the tech step standard up, stood up? However, the missing piece is ideas and creativity. And how do you actually bring that level of creativity without it just being an over like a afterthought? You know, what does that actually look like to bring those creative ideas into the context of, say, an implementation, or into the context of evaluating a marketing tech stack? What does that look like? What's the sort of the level of CX creativity that you guys kind of bring into the work?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think first of all, what we try to do, to what Michael was saying, is try to identify what we're trying to accomplish with anything that we're working on. I think a really good example of this is we've all been part of QBRs, where it's just a highlight of this is what we accomplished last quarter. Here's what we think we're going to work on this next quarter. Here's how much money you spent. Here's how much money you're going to spend. And those aren't really valuable. So what we really try to do is, especially in those situations, or as we're starting to build out a scope of work with folks, is really try to think through what are we trying to accomplish as a business? So are we trying to increase revenue? Are we trying to increase engagement? Are we trying to reduce cost? It's usually one of those three things. And it could also be brand related as well, but typically it's going to fall into one of those three buckets. And then from there, we can start to build out what we think the actual activities within Braze and within the MarTech ecosystem can drive those. I think the one area where marketers are starting to get better, but still have a long ways to go, is on testing and optimization. The thought that marketing is ever complete is a complete fallacy. We're always going to be iterating. We're always going to be optimizing. Every single thing that we do should be a test. How long that test lasts, how many variants are within that test, that's all up for debate. But I think a lot of times folks get handcuffed or hamstrung with, well, I just don't know where to start. And it can just be starting with something. And I think that's kind of going back to the creativity or driving value, is that we don't want our QBRs to be, this is how much money you spent, this is what we accomplished. We want these to be big ideas. And then we draw them down into very tactical things that we can implement over the course of the next 3 or 6 months. So that way we're all driving value together and we're driving the business forward. And I think that's really where what Michael mentioned earlier is important, is the people that we have. And to your point around consultants, is these folks have a treasure trove of knowledge across a number of different brands and verticals. That's why it's really cool to use a use case or an onboarding journey from a global streaming service and then adopt something like that into a pharmaceutical company as folks are coming on to a new therapeutic drug.
And what does that look like practically? I mean, you're in the room, say you're doing a QBR, and you want to get people into a state where they can have these big ideas or to have lateral conversations and brainstorming around what they could do. How do you guys get people into that state? What does that tend to look like practically?
The first thing is living the brand. So we have what we call our brand experience framework. So everyone that's working on one of our customers is going through the process of being a customer of that brand. So experiencing each of the digital properties, if there's a brick and mortar presence, going through that process as well. So they really understand where the pain points are. So that way right there, we're documenting it and we're spitting that back to the customer to show them, like, here are the different areas where you could have improvements. Where should we start? Where's the highest value that we could start from? Just doing that is typically 9 to 12 months of work. Just highlighting to them where their breakdowns are in customer experience or customer engagement, that builds a big backlog. So that's where we start. And then what we do from there is we start to actually whiteboard out what are the things that we could actually accomplish, whether it's an onboarding journey, a re-engagement journey, omni-channel campaigns, whatever that might be, to drive that value. And then we start rating those things. Typically, we just try to do it on a green, yellow, red, which sounds really, really simplistic. But what's going to drive the most value with the least amount of effort? That's typically what we're trying to drive towards. And that way, it's just a constant conversation. Then you've got that as a template for every QBR, every monthly steering committee moving forward. It's not based on some template that we've created or anything like that. It's based on the actual brand.
And it's co-created, right? Like you're actually leading and guiding these folks to create it for themselves and own it.
Exactly. And like we're never asking them for what their own recommendation should be, right? We're coming to the table with, here's what we experienced as an outsider from the brand. Here are the things we would recommend that you do. What other pain points are there that we don't know about that we could help solve?
A long time ago, well, not too long ago, I was working, as I mentioned before, in the airline vertical. And I had this company, their carrier. So they have a fleet of international and domestic flights in their network. And I was working with them for like a little bit more than 12 months. And I took an international flight with this aircraft carrier. And I was sitting there and it was like 5 p.m., you know, lights were starting to go off. And I'm like, I'd like a cup of tea. And the stewardess comes past and says, can I have a cup of tea, just black tea? And she said, and this is an international 8-hour flight, by the way. She said, that'll be $5, thanks. And I'm like, what? $5 for a cup of tea on an 8-hour international flight? That's insane, right? And I, yeah. And then like I talked to this, so I was working with their CX team. We're mapping out their customer journeys and like what information customers should have before they depart, right? Before they actually fly. And I said, oh, it'd probably be a good idea to mention that nothing is for free on this plane. There's no complimentary anything. And you have to pay $5 for a paper cup with some hot water and a tea bag. And I went on about it for months and they kept on saying, one, just shut up. Okay. We get it. Don't want to pay for cups of tea on your international flight. And I think
they should have just handed you a $5 bill.
Yeah, that's right. but I think that gets back to your point is like, you actually kind of need to experience these brands properly, right? Like you actually be in the customer's shoes because like a lot of these marketers are relying on the consultancies to bring that external perspective. You know, the one thing I bring in any company I start or run, I know that as soon as I'm in that business, I have no idea what the customer wants because I can't experience objectively anymore. I can't experience the pain points. I can't experience the good stuff, right? I may see glimmers here and there, but I cannot be in the customer's shoes anymore because I know too much about the brand in which I work in. And so I love that point, Bobby, you raised about actually living in the brand and experiencing it yourself so you can bring some of these pain points to your users. So I want to talk a little bit now about the partnership with Braze. And I guess this is really interesting in that you guys have been working with these folks for a little bit now and you've seen a lot of use cases. And you say that at Stitch that Braze is the official platform of choice. So you're not explicitly just focused on Braze, but it's your platform of choice for the customers you're working with. But I want to talk about, I guess, the evolution with that relationship with Braze. Can you give us an inside view on what does that partnership look like? How did it start? How does it develop? How do you interact with a MarTech vendor like Braze with day-to-day work, but also strategically as a business?
So this is a quickly evolving area. We're kind of emerging from being a startup to starting to scale our business. And as we're doing like that anyway, any startup is trying to figure out like where's their sweet spot? Where's our sweet spot with Braze? And I can tell you it's been a really interesting opportunity just because of how we think, you know, how I kind of personally look at the Braze business and saying they've likely underinvested in internal services. They haven't really built out a great partner ecosystem. And they're moving into the enterprise space. So all those things are making this a prime space for a consultancy like Stitch to focus on their business. And that was some of our theories as we went into this. And what's happened for us really as very quickly is that need has become very apparent as we're working alongside of their Braze sellers. So our whole focus is how do we touch as many possible areas within side of Braze? Every place that we can touch creates opportunity for luck. That's how I kind of think about it. So yes, we have a relationship where we're working with the Braze account executive to either grow an existing customer or land a net new logo. And then our responsibility is to carry the success of that customer long term. Mm-hmm. How do we continue to expand? How do we reduce churn? Right along as how we're helping a Braze account executive reduce the risk on their deal because we're coming with a strong point of view. Here's how we see that. And so we see us showing up and both driving with sales, working with customer success, also working with a lot of their strategic teams, which are back to Bobby's earlier kind of commentary, where they're trying to come up with these new inspirational ideas. So they're not even thinking about, here's the Braze technology, here's an idea, and how do we inspire our brands? And then we partner, as Stitch, are partnering with that group to say, here's how we make that a reality. So we take from inspiration to how do we execute on that? So you really see across our whole business, we're touching so many aspects of this Braze business, and our theory and thesis about how this would work is really, it's working out well, and it's allowing us to grow our business quickly and add more and more consultants. So I don't like... This has not been going on for many, many years, although while Bobby and I have exposure to Braze back to the Apple way for many, many years, this relationship still is relatively new, but I don't think it could be going much better. And there are a few things we'd like to improve on with the relationship, but overall, I think it's really positive. And I think in some cases, they've talked about us almost being a secret weapon as we're bringing alongside into their existing customers. It gives them an advantage.
Yeah, I can definitely see that why a lot of MarTech vendors go down this path of having like very explicitly focused consultancy partners. I mean, because it just makes sense, right? Like it goes one and the other. You buy the tech, you need to buy the talent as well to make it happen. Consultancies can get you there much faster. So, but I want to understand practically the dynamics of this. I mean, what kinds of people do you talk at Brave? Like how do you work together on accounts? Like what are these sort of practical touch points that you have in this partnership? And how does it actually inform what you do individually as a business as well?
Yeah, so on a day-to-day basis, our solutions team is working side by side with the Braze sales team to identify mutual customers that we've worked with in the past or may currently work with, but primarily looking at finding areas to either help existing Braze customers. So that could be through a Braze capability assessment that we have. So you've had Braze for a number of years, but you haven't had the opportunity to just kind of take a step back and figure out the best ways to update your architecture or update your Canvas journeys or different areas like that. The other area too is net new implementations and migrations. So as soon as Braze account executive identifies that an account they're working with is going to need help with an implementation or with the migration, which is 9 times out of 10, we're starting to work with them and talk through that opportunity together and start working with that team early. And the whole idea there is making sure that as we're going through the process together, we're co-selling, and we talk a lot about that with the Braze team. So that way the customer views it as a seamless experience. You know, it's Braze and Stitch, Stitch and Braze. And that's really what our whole goal is to really be side by side. And that's why we love the motion of having a single partner that we're focused on, not only because of that go-to-market motion where we can co-sell together, but also there's no one in the world that's going to know this platform as well as we do because it's all that we do and it's all our consultants focus on. So obviously by proxy, they're going to have a lot of intros or experience with the periphery of that MarTech like Snowflake or Mixpanel or Segment. But having Braze as the cornerstone, like you mentioned earlier, provides us unparalleled expertise on that platform.
I can see, I can see why you would link in so much with sales because there is just so many opportunities and that information share between both is like, you know, we can update from this account and maybe the Braze side and the sales side, they're actually thinking, okay, well, we're in stage three in our lead nurturing process. They might bring you guys in to do a workshop or to do a consultancy, you know, and then on the other side, I mean, because you guys are so focused on Braze, you just need to do a couple of Google searches. If you're like, oh, okay, we're looking at Braze, but who can help us actually use it? I mean, you just a few Google searches away when you've got that tight integration within the buying process as well. I often think about the process of buying MarTech is also buying consultancy hours as well, even during that process of evaluating tech, but also like, yeah, we actually need those skills, we need those people and those insights to actually make this possible. I mean, most people in MarTech are not going to be Braze experts at this point in time because Braze is still relatively new. And look, you know, as you say, right, like any new MarTech, oh, you know, we're looking for somebody to head up this new marketing automation tool that just launched 2 years ago. And by the way, we want 6 years of experience in the tool. You know, they often see that kind of thing where it's like the Brett companies themselves don't actually understand how much experience is even possible with some of these tools as they come out and as they innovate as well. So it's very good points that you raise. But let's look ahead. Let's look at how the MarTech landscape is evolving. I mean, you kind of jumped into this partnership with Braze to disrupt the legacy cloud infrastructure and offer something new, offering something that's more nimble and lightweight and more flexible and dynamic to what marketers need today. But let's look into the future. I mean, over the next 5 years, I mean, what do you foresee as the major changes in the marketing tech stack? Where will we see more unbundling? Will we see more of like an a la carte approach where you choose the right point solution for what you need? Or will be integration become more seamless? I mean, what do you guys see in the future of the marketing technology stack? Bobby, did you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of key things that we're seeing. Number one is really the emergence of a data warehouse strategy. So even if marketers do not have access to their data warehouse previously, they're getting access to it now, whether that's through native integrations with their customer engagement platform, like cloud data ingestion with Braze, or through really innovative companies that have come up like HighTouch, where they're giving the ability to be able to pull that data out of Snowflake or Redshift or BigQuery at a much faster rate, giving marketers access to data that they didn't have before. So I think that's number one. Number two is moving to more best of breed. And I think that's kind of a, there's two sides to that. When I say best of breed, I mean best of MarTech or customer engagement platforms right now, moving away from the legacy providers, and then also really focusing on how do I make things more integrated across my MarTech stack. And I think that's going back to the example of HighTouch. That's really where they're able to help a lot as well, where something like Braze doesn't have integrations to every single piece of the MarTech stack or every single other platform out there that runs customer engagement and customer experience. But the combination of a strong data warehouse strategy with a platform that allows you to push that data wherever it needs to or make it available wherever it needs to is the tops for sure. I think the other thing people are starting to really realize is that any time that someone says they can do everything, I think marketers are getting much smarter and realizing that that's not the case, right? Like, could they do everything? Sure. But like we talked about earlier, what's the time and the value and the money I'm going to have to spend to get to that point versus I could bring a couple of these different platforms together, integrate it well on top of my data warehouse, and get to value much faster.
So there is a bit of a debate raging online at the moment about this whole topic, Bobby, about, will MarTech become more warehouse native? And there's pros, and you mentioned HighTouch with Tejas Manohar. He's been doing a lot of writing about this. He's the CEO of HighTouch. He's been writing, CDPs are dead, we should be totally embracing the warehouse, and the marketing tech stack is evolving towards integration with the warehouse and where all your data already is. And then you've got people like Michael Katz, and this is a previous episode on Making Sense of MarTech, where I had these two folks debate, where he's like, no, you like companies practically need a CDP. They don't need to go in the warehouse. There's a lot of good opportunities there for marketers to use a CDP and not heavily rely on the engineering and data teams in a warehouse situation. But it sounds, Bobby, that you're in the warehouse native positive camp. You're in the pro camp at the moment. Does that sound about right?
Boy, it probably is not on purpose, but just kind of what I've seen lately. I think the caveat to that though is that to have a strong data warehouse strategy, you have to have the team to support it. You have to have the team to be able to create the views that a marketer would need access to. You can't just have a bunch of unstructured data. I think the other side of that too is if you're buying a CDP because you don't have access to data, you don't have access to the engineers, well, someone's got to pump that data into the CDP. So you're going to need data and engineering e on either side of that. I definitely think there's still use cases to CDP. One of those being identity resolution. I know HighTouch just came out with identity resolution as well, so I'm sure that they would have a nice rebuttal to that. But I think there's room for both. I think also for 25 years we've been saying email is dead, so I think it's probably too early to say that CDPs are dead or something like that. But I think it really just depends on the organization. Just to give you another example, I talked to a large financial institution today, and they are completely focused on best of breed. They have a legacy cloud provider for email. They have a strong mobile application as well. They've got a CDP, but they've also got Snowflake. So they're really focused on what's the best piece of technology within that MarTech realm. And I'm going to latch onto that because I think they think there's a lot of value to it. But then you've got other organizations that are so tied at the hip with the Oracles or the Adobes or Salesforces of the world that they're always going to go down that path. So I think saying that there's one best way is really difficult, but it's what's the best way for the company and the resources that we have at this point in time.
Yeah, that's right. And every situation is completely different. Depends on what vertical, different verticals and industries are ahead of others. And there's different maturities in different companies. And so the answer to a lot of these questions is it depends. It depends. But Michael, what's your view? I mean, what's your long-term view in terms of how the marketing tech stack might change?
I think Bobby talked a little bit about how we kind of help customers evaluate kind of like that red, yellow, green. And I think we're trying to get to like, how do we simplify things for marketers. So I think there is a big movement to go do that. And that's where companies like Stitch can for sure help with that. But I think that there is this recognition of marketers have been marketed to for many, many years, right? And a lot of cases, what we're seeing is like there's this recognition that, hey, what was said to me as far as what this platform could go do and this grand vision is not real. I've been paying a premium for a lot of these grand visions. So more and more marketers are becoming educated and saying, no, what is real and what is really needed? We've been sold this idea of customer 360, and that is the way. And you must follow that way. And more marketers are kind of where Bobby was going is like, what's the return on doing that? Like, am I really going to gain a lot by having a full view of my customer? In many cases, no. Like, what is really needed? So we do see a trend where this inspiration and marketing story that didn't really have any, like, wasn't real in some cases. There are lawsuits around that. I don't want to go into some of those stories as far as what's real time and what's not, but they are understanding that we need to do something that's actually going to work for me, and they are becoming more and more educated. So I think that's in addition to where Bobby was kind of talking, the seeing the marketing trends, we're also seeing marketers that are becoming much more aware of what they're using and not getting caught up in all the marketing and fluff around those products.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting you mentioned that, Michael, because there's tech shifts, there's technology changes, which are impactful, right? Like new platforms, new softwares, new paradigms. Okay, great. But what you're actually talking about is more of a like a cultural or an educational change, right? Which is probably even more impactful. Like what's going on in the brains of these marketers buying and using these technologies? How are they getting the education? Who are they listening to? Who are they reading? How are they getting their critical insights for when they actually run their practice and what they're doing? You know, that I would say is probably even more impactful. I mean, even today in 2023, we don't have very many marketing technology focused university degrees. It's kind of a subset of marketing or a subset of tech. It's sort of in the gray area. And so we still have young people that are coming through education and going to university and then kind of falling into MarTech specific roles. They kind of get into digital marketing or, you know, they fall into it. There's no clear paths into the industry. It's very much a sort of a link from one job to the next, and you build experience that way. And so even on that point, I think that there are some great education resources coming out, and particularly this year in Australia, actually, we've just seen a couple of really great courses come out, focus on marketing technology explicitly, both at a university level and an individual provider. So it's interesting you raise that because I think that there is a lot of interesting changes on how marketers think about technology that maybe the vendors aren't thinking about so much. But I wanted to shift into a more personal question because I know you two folks are super busy, right? You've got a startup consultancy, you're going crazy, Braze is going like growing like crazy. You guys are super busy working with some incredible brands. But I know that you both have, you know, responsibilities, right? Mike, you've got a father of two boys. I've got one son myself, and he's a handful. I don't know how you do it with two boys. And Bobby, you're a dog dad to three Dachshunds. I'm like, how do you take care of three dogs? That's insane. But like, how do you guys balance that? Like building, running a consultancy, a lot of moving parts, a lot of staff, a lot of management, but then also having time to invest in your relationships personally. Like, what does that look like? Michael, tell us about how you sort of balance that time as a father.
Yeah, so it's you know, I've just learned that like some people can create a wall, right? All right, here's my work life, and then here's my personal life. For me, that doesn't work. What's easier for me is when it's way more integrated in my life. The fact that my almost 8-year-old is interested in what brands that Stitch is closing and interested in like, where are you going to open up the next office, Dad? And like I like that. Like I want him to be a part of this journey as my wife Jenny is. And I have a 2-year-old. He's not quite there yet in understanding what I do. So I find a lot of peace in the fact that that Stitch life is integrated into my work life. So it's not this idea is if it's balanced, it's just in. Like it just kind of flows through it and we're all in this together. And I think that's what that works for us. And you know, I'm not working 80 hours a week. We find a good balance in that way. I would have a little bit of problem with the home life in that scenario, but I think that's what's worked well in a prior life, and it's working really well at Stitch to have my family invested in this as much as possible. And my mom is slowly understanding what I do, even though I've explained it many, many times with so many customer examples. It's finally starting to hit for her.
You know, back in the early days of the MarTech Weekly, when I was writing it as a side project on top of my full-time consulting job, my wife is an English teacher. And obviously, she's marked a billion essays in the past, right, with all her students. And I started sending her because I thought, oh, it'd be good to have someone proofread my essays and my content before I publish it. And so, like, overnight, I would say, hey, you know, would you like to review this, read it, give me some feedback? And I remember the first three that I sent her, she's like, I do not understand a single word in any of this stuff, like in the MarTech. She's like, what's a CDP? What does omnichannel mean? There's so many words I have no idea about. I feel like I'm completely useless in reviewing essays. But Michael, I think that, you know, you raised such a great insight there. I think about like the integration of family and work, you know, and I think that I've seen that myself. And of course, you know, we're all talking here as entrepreneurs, as people's owning, running businesses, is that when you're having a great time at work, you're having a great time at home. You know, like when things are going great at work, maybe you just closed a great client, or you want to go out and have a party. You want to go out and have dinner, or you want to go out and celebrate on the weekend. You know, you're having a great time, right? And that emotions and those energies come into your family life. When you're not having a good time, maybe you're crunched or you're struggling with revenue or you got a bad staff situation, that stuff comes into your family life as well. Like that's unavoidable. I think that separation of work life and home life is a bit of a misnomer. It's a bit of a fallacy because how you're feeling and thinking about the work that you love doing is, of course, is going to rub off on your relationships. Of course, it's going to rub it off.
Yeah, and I think the key there is, and I've Brad Stevens, coach, well-known coach here in the States, coached Butler University, and I always, you know, he was very young, inexperienced, and took Butler to two back-to-back national championship games. Didn't win, but really close. And I always watched him because he was never too high, never too low, like that balance. That is the key to making that work, because you're right, it's so easy for a loss to disrupt your other side of your life for a big win. We just had a big win today, what we're really pumped
Oh,
about. But it's like, how do
congratulations.
you find, thank you, how do you find that balance? And I think it's always like you have to keep that in mind. You just can't ever be too high. You can never be too low. And I think that works really well.
Yeah. All right, Bobby, tell us about your three Dachshunds. I mean, you must have to spend a lot of time at home, I'm sure, because gosh, that's a lot of maintenance. But how do you balance being a co-founder at Stitch and all the things that are going on in your personal life as well?
Very much like Michael, my life is very integrated. I say that my wife is the best spouse and manager I could have asked for. So we start every day with a 2-hour walk in the morning and get
Oh.
coffee. And
Amazing.
at least half of that time is talking about Stitch, what's going on. She's asking me if I followed up with certain accounts, how we're doing on hiring. I mean, she is on it. So that's how I am able to balance it, because it's very much integrated. She knows everything that's happening at Stitch, and that's the way I like it, because it's the biggest bulk of my time. Like you mentioned, I don't have kids. We have the three dogs. Working from home makes it nice because they're hardly ever home by themselves unless we're traveling. So it's really nice to be able to have like what happens throughout the day, and then to be able to talk about it either that evening or first thing that morning, and then work on it together.
Yeah, it's a great ritual. I mean, there's something interesting about an integrated family in an integrated MarTech stack, right? You want to make those two. You want to make those two things work, you know.
Look at
It
that
is fascinating.
analogy. You're a pro, Juan.
But I guess, yeah, I think it's fascinating. I mean, we don't talk about the personal impacts of our work. MarTech can be extremely stressful, extremely technical and complex. So bringing your families, giving them insight into what you do. And even Michael, just going back to you, I mean, your kids are so invested that they're asking when's the next office going to be open? Or Bobby, your wife is saying, hey, you know, like, how's it going with that staff situation? There's something inspiring to your family members, I think, when they see you working hard to try to build something valuable, right? And trying to create something great. You know, I think that's inspiring for kids and also for your spouses as well. So thank you for sharing. That's really awesome. But last question for you both. I mean, where can we find you on social media, on the internet? I mean, where can we interact with you? Where can we have discussions? Where can we learn more?
I think Bobby and I are both were big advocates for founder brand. So yes, we have our website in stitch.cx, but I think the best way to connect with what's our point of view, how what kind of successes are we seeing is through both of our LinkedIns. So I know we can link to that in the show notes because I think that's where you'll get the most sense of who we are as people and who our brand looks like. And we're always constantly sharing great examples of architecture diagrams that Bobby puts together, or I'm complaining about ABC. You'll see it, but that's the best way to connect with us.
Awesome. Well, we regularly interview people just like Michael and Bobby every single week in Making Sense of MarTech, people that are featured in the MarTech Weekly newsletter. If you like this episode, you can subscribe at themartechweekly.com to get our newsletter and all of our updates of the podcast. If you really like this podcast, you can subscribe in your podcatcher, and we would love it if you give us a review. Anything would help us really reach more people with fantastic marketing tech insights with people at the forefront of their industries like Michael and Bobby. So thanks for joining us, Michael and Bobby.
Thank you.